Yes. Good morning, everybody. Reminder, today is Wednesday, not Thursday. It's already coming off of a Memorial Day weekend. I'm already thrown off. Good Erev Shabbos, everyone. Exactly. We did say L'chud Rana. It is Wednesday, Baruch Hashem. And I'll reach out to you. You'll remind me. Thank you for your flexibility for today. We have a simcha tomorrow in the shul. Baruch Hashem. Today's breakfast was sponsored by everyone here in honor of Janosch for all of his setting up. And in honor of his setting up, we only sat at the tables that he didn't set up today. And also, our learning today is sponsored by my grandfather on the occasion of his 51st yahrzeit. Avram Elazar Alter Ben Baruch, the Shamash in Heaven, Aliyah. I'm named after him. Passed away. My father was 11. My aunts were a little bit older, a little bit younger. And the 50th yahrzeit was very unique, as it was during Corona and the shuls just opened up. My father was able to say Kaddish. It was a Shabbos. We were all planning to be together for that Shabbos, the whole extended family, and that didn't work out, but we had a very nice to get together on Zoom, spanning here and Eretz Yisrael. We had a lot of siblings that were on, Baruch Hashem, and 51 years. Okay, so let's get started. Parsha Shlach is a very, very important parsha, very, very depressing parsha. We go from one to the next to the next. We go from Baloscha, ayayay, to Shlach, which is a lot more, ayayay. And then Korach, and it's like, oh my gosh, you can't get your head around it because of everything that's going on over here. So let's begin at the very beginning, where Moshe sounds like he's anticipating that something is going to go wrong. How do we know that Moshe is anticipating that something is going to go wrong? Because Moshe, after listing and delineating all of the names of the Meraglim, Moshe says, Elishamos HaNashim, Asher Shalach Moshe. These are the names of the people that Moshe sent. Lasuras Aretz, who are going to Latur. By the way, the Torah says Moshe instructed them to Latur. Lasuras Aretz. And they were called not Torim, or what? Meraglim, right? So there's a difference between Meragel, which means usually, most of our Shem say, Meragel means to look at it in a very negative way, right? In a very critical way. And Latour means, you know, maybe for military purposes, which is really what their goal was over here. But different interpretation of what those two adjective means, verbs. Latour's Aretz, Vayikra Moshe, Lahoshea Benun.
Rabbi Markowitz?
Yes.
Sorry to bother you, but you see later when we talk about tzitzis, Latour is a better word. It's a more positive word.
Yes. Lo Sasur, yeah. Latour is a more positive word. Correct. Yeah. So, now, Moshe names Yehoshua. His name was Hoshea, and he names him Yehoshua. This is already anticipating that there seems to be Moshe's concern that something is off. Something is off with these people, maybe with this mission, with the request, where he needs to give his prime student, Yehoshua, some chizuk, and he gives him the name Yehoshua, and the Medrash says, why? Ka Hoshiacha me'atzas me'aitzazu. Hashem should save you from their conspiracy.
Rabbi,
yes.
A simple question that I always had. If Moshe realized that something had to get done for Yehoshua, why didn't he think that something might have to get done for nine of the others?
Great. Okay. Excellent. Why only them? I'm going to ask it slightly differently. Well, that's your question's even better. Why Yehoshua, not Kalei? Why did Yehoshua need a bracha? Kalei, only two left unscathed, Yehoshua and Kalei. No, we'll see. That was later on, right? So did he know? Moshe knew he was going to dive in somewhere. He was going to be more take more initiative. What was it about this that he knew Yehoshua he dive in for? But not Kalev. And again, you can argue that maybe he should have in for all of them. Maybe they all needed name changes. The truth is, if you look at their names, they're very, very rough names. Let's go. Gadiel ben Sodi, Gadi ben Susi, Amiel ben Gimali. you notice a lot of their names have animals in them, right? The Medrash points this out and says that maybe these weren't their names, but this reflects their nature, right? Nachbi, these are names, most of them, not all of them, Yigab and Yosef, most of them we really have not heard of, nor do people use, right? For I think, the right purpose. I heard Malcolm Holine. I remember he spoke in Englewood to one of the previous war, 2013. What was that summer? And he spoke in Englewood at a rally, and he was Parsha Shlach. And he said that, what do you see from here? That who gets remembered in history? Yoshua and Kalev. They spoke positively about Eretz Yisrael. But those that spoke negatively about Eretz Yisrael, okay, they get a pasuk. We don't remember their names. Right? We don't memorialize them. But those that spoke proudly and emphatically, very clearly and positively about Eretz Yisrael, they get remembered forever. So why is it that Kalev, no, but Yehoshua, yes? Any thoughts as to why one? Yeah.
Yehoshua needed to.
Yeah.
Kalev, even though he spoke positively, they weren't going to jump on him. Because Kalev was not in Moshe's pocket, so to speak. Yehoshua was. So Yehoshua needed something extra. So people wouldn't jump on him. Sure, he said, Moshe's got.
Yeah.
So Kalev, he could say positive, but they weren't going to jump on him. So he didn't necessarily need a
He didn't need to be as much of a gibor to stand up against them.
He could, but they weren't concerned on him. Because he wasn't his buddy.
Right. Sorry. Yeah.
Didn't God designate Yeshua as a successor to
Moshe? Yes. So how is that connected, Hashem? Yeah. Just last week's parsha. What?
God designated Yeshua as a successor to Moshe.
So therefore, Yeshua needed more protection?
I think so.
Okay, so I think... So, number one, the Gur Aryeh, the Maharal writes, the Gur Aryeh is the Maharal's parish on Rashi. He writes, La mispalo Yeshua Yosef mispalo al Kalev, Lokasha. The Gnai Gadol Yesh Adam Shetalmido Enu Kahogan. He was his main Talmud, his main guy. And it would look really bad for Moshe if Yehoshua would be the one speaking disparagingly or about Eretz Yisrael. She Yomer Uimali Shalomar Kachme Rabo, Lohaya Osa Maisen Elu. And it would be more from Yeshua, it'd be more believable. And more believable, it would bring the Jewish people even in a worse state if they heard it from Yehoshua specifically. That is, yeah. So he needed more of that strength. Maybe Yehoshua, oh, so good. So what is it? Is there something in Yehoshua's personality that we see that? Yeah. You're right. Yeah. Yeah. So the Targum Yonasan says the reason why Moshe needed to change Yehoshua's name is that he was too modest. He was too humble. And Yehoshua. And modesty is a very important midah. We saw Moshe is the most humble of all the people in the world. But sometimes with that notion of modesty comes this inability to make decisions. And the inability to stand up for what one believes in, because you can easily say, who am I? Who am I? They probably know better than I am, right? We're all educated. So the Targum Yonasan Ben Uziel says Yehoshua needed more of the tefillah than Kalev or maybe than anybody else because of his humble nature.
Given
yeah.
That, just to follow up, given that Hashem picked Yeshua by name.
Yeah.
How would it look when Yeshua turns around and says the land is not good? Which is contrary to what Hashem wants. You have to make sure
Yeshua falls in line. Yeah, right. Because if he didn't, it would look much worse. And others point out, the Meshech Chachma points out, when did we meet Yehoshua first? He was a warrior. He was a general. You can argue he was the first general of the Jewish people by Amalek. And if Yehoshua gets up and says, no, we can't do it, then the people say, hey, this guy knows what he's doing. Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
But Hashem did the Yeshua, so I forced Yehoshua to provide
Yeah, very nice. The argument, though, on that, Yossi, is you're right. He added Hashem's name to Yehoshua. Is that Yehoshua, we see, doesn't really take a speaking role. It's Kalev that steps up, not Yehoshua. And we'll have to see why is that. So that, I forgot, I saw this last night, I forgot where. This answers Mr. Epstein's question. Why does Kalev step up and not Yehoshua? Because Yehoshua has the Negiah. This is Rav Druk. He says, Yehoshua, the people say, yeah, of course you want to go into Eretz Yisrael. You know why? Hashem says, but you are going to be the next leader. Of course you want to go there. So yeah, we're not going to, like, his word has less value when it comes to the positive way. So we need to rely upon Kalev when speaking positively. Alo na'alaki yarashno so. We're going to do it because that has more weight and more value than a Yehoshua. Yeah.
There's a problem. If the people do that, Moshe stacked the deck by giving Yehoshua this extra insurance,
yeah,
they would have been even more upset.
Yeah.
Right. They would have said, if he gave the other Meraglim the name, we wouldn't be going 40 years in the desert. So how does that work? Moshe stacked the deck against them.
Yeah, I hear you. It could be, but Derash Adam Rosa Leilech Ba Molichno, so where people take a cross. It's double. Get points. So the Gemara says that a derech adam rotza leilech b'malifno. So where somebody wants to go, they're going to go no matter what. They're going to get a bracha. They're going to get a tefillah. They're going to get an extra name. If that's not where they want to go, they're not going to go there. And it seems like Mahusha intuited that for these other Meraglim, that was their intention. They were speaking negatively. That was it. We're going to get more into this. Why would that be? Very shortly. But it sounds like Yehoshua could, it was about influence. It wasn't about where he wanted to go himself. Finally, just a last thought on this. This is really beautiful. From Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. He says, V'eshar, why Moshe, not Yehoshua? Shesavar Moshe, Shekalev Shahaya Nasui, Li'isha Tzadekes. Kalev was married to a very holy woman. Who was Kalev married to? Miriam. Kemo Miriam Hanavia, Batach Lo Yitpas B'Atas Meraglim. He knew that she would not let him succumb to the eights of the Meraglim. He had a positive influence. He had someone to go home to, and he would. Right, his wife would set him straight. Right, just imagine after 40 days they came back, he goes home, and the next day is the report, set it straight. She was going to give him that chizuk and that strength. And also not just that, but the fortitude and the confidence to stand up to everybody else. Where Yehoshua was not married. Yehoshua only got married later on. Who did Yehoshua marry? Rachav. Right, that was our first ever. If you remember. Rosh Chodeshir, lunch and learn. That was about Rachav. So that is the thought of Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, which is very apropos for those that know him and know about him. Okay, that is all question number one for today. Secondly, where did the Meraglim go wrong? What was their mistake that they made? So like, there's a lot of different approaches to this. There's a lot of books that have been written just on this notion. Where did the Meraglim go wrong? I'd like to share with you a thought from the Sri De'esh. Who was a Sri De'esh? Sri De'esh was a survivor of the Holocaust. He was born in Poland. He was in the Warsaw Ghetto. He was a brilliant thinker, innovative, very creative, a modern thinker. Modern Orthodoxy. Some say he was like one of the fathers, family fathers of modern Orthodoxy. He survived the Holocaust and moved to Montreux, Switzerland. But people asked him shilas from all over the world. There's some famous shilas about boys and girls, youth groups and different things like that. Bat mitzvahs, he has a tshuvas about bat mitzvahs that he has. A very, very fascinating individual. And he has the Sri De'esh on his tshuvos. And he has a small sefer on Machshava and on the parsha called Lifrakim. And in Lifrakim, he says the following. He quotes a Medrash. He quotes a Zohar, actually. The Zohar writes, I have the copy of it right here. The Zohar writes that what was the concern of the Meraglim? Why did they go into this in such a negative way? What was it about Eretz Yisrael, about them personally, that they went into this in a certain way? Amru, they said, if the Jewish people go into Eretz Yisrael, Ya'avirunu milios roshim, v'yimna Moshe roshim acherim. We might be stripped of our leadership titles, and Moshe may give it to somebody else. Sharei zachinu anu lios roshim b'midbar. We were zocha to be leaders in the midbar. Avol be'eretz Yisrael lo niska. But Eretz Yisrael, maybe we won't be leaders. Well, va'al shenatu etzara la'atzman, mesu heim v'chol elu shekiblam divrayhem. And because this is what they did, their midah k'neged midah was that they never made it to Eretz Yisrael to begin with. Their concern, based on the Zohar, was very simple, that they were afraid to go into Eretz Yisrael because they would lose their titles. They wanted to be leaders, and if they were going to Eretz Yisrael, they didn't know what was going to be. Yes. Milty. Okay, why? Yeah, people are afraid of new things. So there are two things. Number one, people are afraid of new things. They wanted to stay in the midbar. Number two is that when people are in leadership titles, sometimes they get consumed with that power, that respect that brings along with it. And they... Yeah. I think when people are consumed with fear, they do things that are irrational. I hear you. Yeah.
The possible answer, no.
Yeah.
Is they thought that this would be an insurrection. People would go along with them, and Moshe would be ousted, and then they would no rush. Let's assign, let's get a head, let's get a leader, and let's go back to the throne. But they would have stayed. Right. They would have deposed Moshe, and they didn't realize that they can't depose Moshe.
Yeah. So. What? Well, they're taking God out of the right. That was a big part of their problem. This is, I think, the Ramban, that what was their biggest failure was that they didn't see Hashem in all of this. You're right. Naturally, they probably couldn't win the war. A slave nation, you know. But Hashem fought the wars beforehand. He's going to fight these wars now. Yeah. 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 That is the grasshoppers. It's Dr. Tursky's, Rabbi Dr. Tursky's, where it's still in Yibes Chodesh. This is one of his classic interpretations that, what does it mean? We looked like grass. We felt like grasshoppers in their eyes. He says their avera was a lack of self-esteem. And when you have a lack of self-esteem, you have a lack of confidence in yourself, then you see everybody else as giants and you as a grasshopper. And if Moshe charged you with this job, clearly he believed in you, okay? You were a leader beforehand. And what we see from this point in the Zohar, quoted by the Sri Deish, is that when one has fear, your mind plays tricks on you, right? And he writes here that there are two different types of leaders. He writes there's a Menahel and a Manhik. He writes that a menahel's job is to, like, to steer the ship, to manage the business, to get from point A to point B. But what happens when getting from point A to point B is very difficult, and there's like there's a fork in the road, or there's traffic, or there's an army waiting for you in the middle? What happens when things go awry? He says that a manhig is going to shut down. Right? They're just moving forward. That's that they're given directives, and that's what they could do. A manhig is a visionary, one that doesn't just see obstacles. They see every obstacle and challenge as an opportunity and a chance to grow and to elevate themselves and elevate the people around them. And the Meraglim, when they went into Eretz Israel, they saw the land for what it was. And they saw it and they said, we're not going to do this. We can't do this. Because he says they looked at it from like a menahel perspective, from a manager perspective. And just, yeah, we can't go from one place to the other without getting crushed and creamed by these people. They're dangerous, they're scary. Eretz Ochel Yisraeli. But their job was to be more than just a menahel. It was to be a manik, to be a visionary, to see beyond what their eyes were telling them. We know Rashi says, Hashem made it that way, that people died in it. So this way people would be busy, they wouldn't notice them. This is all being done. So when we try to see beyond, right, what we actually see physically, then we're better off. Yeah. Ooh, you're asking a tricky question. So it's not so simple. It's really not so simple. So Hashem said to Moshe, Shlach lecha, send for yourself. Yeah, so what does that mean? Yeah. I mean, you're a child comes to you and says, I want to do blank. I want to go to college And you, I don't want to go to college. I want to drop out. So at what point do you tell them, do what you want, or, you know, don't say anything? At one point, even though you see it's a bad idea, they're going to do something that it's a bad field. It's a bad idea. They're making a bad decision. They continue going out with this person, even though you're not the biggest fan of them. When do you say, you put your foot down and say, no, this is, or do you let it write it? Or when do you not say anything, you let it write it out? So here, the way Rashi understands this is that Hashem is letting them write it out. They clearly wanted to do this. They felt a need, a desire to check out the land before they went into it. And they were going to fester. This was going to, you know, develop into something even worse if they didn't go do this and try it out. Right? It's certain, you have to let children make mistakes. Yeah. Yeah, that's the way Moshe frames it in Devarim. There's a lot of contradictions between Devarim, the way Moshe recounts the story, and the way it's said over here. And this is one way to understand, you know, what was going on in terms of how did Hashem let them do this? Hashem has to let people, let his children make mistakes. Otherwise, it's going to be difficult for us to grow on our own. Let's go on to how, so we discussed Yehoshua Nakalev. We discussed how did they go into this, maybe with the wrong mindset. And now how are they going to convince the Jewish people that this was not the right place to live? And this is an amazing diuk from the Maharsha. Who is the Maharsha? The Maharsha is found in the back of almost every Masechta in Shas. His name was Rav Shlomo Idols. The truth is, his last name was not Idols. That was his mother-in-law's last name. His mother-in-law supported him in Torah. So he said, you supported me in Torah. So when I write my Sfarim that are going to be found in the future in the back of every single Masechta in Shas, your name will be recognized forever. Your name, in honor of you, I got to learn Torah. So amazing, right? So he has, the Gemara talks, darshans out a lot of the story here about Chedem Raglim. And he makes the following deal. He says, what were they trying to do? So he says, we have to look at what type of fruit did they bring back from Eretz Israel? I don't remember, what fruit did they bring back? What? Pomegranates, good. Grapes. What else? They brought back Eshkol Anavim Echad, Vayisu Bamamot, Bishnayim Min HaRimonim, Umin HaTe'enim. First, grapes, pomegranates, and figs. And then, Vaisaprulo, they told him the story. Vayom Rabbanu Al Aretz Asher Shalachtanu, we went to the land that you sent us to. Vegam Zavat Chalav Udvashi, it's a land of Zavat Chalav Udvash. What does that mean? They also brought chalav and dvash. Dvash is, right, not, it's date honey. So they brought dates. Vizeh pirya, and these are its fruits. Zayim minim. How many, this is like a trick, there are seven minim. How many of the seven minim did they bring?
Five.
Well, there's what the trick question, because one of them is not a min. Figs are not one of the minim, right? They brought four out of seven minim. This is an amazing thought. They brought seven, right? Which ones did they not bring?
Chita.
Sora, and? Zeit Shemen. What's the difference, he says, between chita, seora, and shemen, and oil, right? Wheat, barley, and oil versus hot, what? Okay, very good. They're all using the base of Mikdash. Technically, they all are because of Bikurim. Okay, good. What else? What else is the difference? Okay, interesting. Finished product versus things that need to be made. That's great.
Staples.
Yeah. So the bread, wheat. He says, if you just ate the fruits every day, you would be living an unhealthy lifestyle. Fruits are desserts, he says. They're not ikar chaye nefesh.
They're not staples.
As opposed to the wheat, barley, and oil, those are needed every day, right? Again, we look, what? They didn't know about carbs back then. Yeah. Right.
They said it's a nice place to visit, but I wouldn't want to live there.
So that's the Maharsha says. It's such a beautiful idea. He says, what were they showing implicitly, right? This is like marketing, advertising. What are we showing? You have to always ask, what are they not showing here? What are they not telling us? So they're showing us the candy in Eretz Israel, right? They're showing us the swimming pools. They're showing us the water parks, the amusement parks in Eretz Israel. They're saying that's what Eretz Yisrael is. Eretz Yisrael is Disney World. It's not a place to live. It's a place to visit. It's like desserts. It's luxurious. It's not a place to live because they don't have the basic necessities of life. They don't have wheat. They don't have barley. They don't have oil. That's what Rav Zev Leff interprets it this way. How he reads the Maharsha. And it's not about that. It's so you can go visit Eretz Yisrael as much as you want, but to live there, inhabit there, not for you, right? It's like an island off of, it's like the Bahamas or Bermuda. That's what it is. Nice place to go to. You can't live there. You can't live outside the hotels. Come on, it's dangerous. That's Eretz Yisrael, right? And that's I thought an amazing, amazing thought from the Maharsha in terms of always paying attention to what we see and what we don't see. Okay. On the theme of Eretz Yisrael, because really that is the entire parsha. It's about speaking positively about Eretz Yisrael, which is something we've experienced in the past few weeks here in America. How this war, this incursion, whatever you want to call it, has really poured itself into our, you know, not just as defending Eretz Yisrael, but defending our lives as Jews. And thinking about always speaking positively, optimistically about Eretz Yisrael, the PR that Eretz Yisrael gets. This is our parsha where positive PR about Eretz Yisrael really matters. I'd like to conclude with a thought from Rav Schachter, quoting the Rav. Rav Schachter has a few different svarim out there on thoughts from Rabbi Soloveitchik. They're all called Harav, Nefesh Harav, Penine Harav, and Divrei Harav. There's three volumes of them. And they're like, it's a halachic autobiography about the Rav. And there's Torah. And then at the end, there's like Divrei Torah based on the Parashiyot. And he asks, or the Rav asked the following question: does the Israeli flag have Kedusha? Does the Israeli flag have Kedusha? What? The strings have Kedusha, right? So what's the status of an Israeli? That was his question. So he quotes the Shulchan Aruch and the Shach. The Shulchan Aruch writes in Yoredei and Hilchos Avelos, and if somebody passes away, right, dies a regular death. If someone dies a regular death, then they are buried not in their clothing, which they die in, or other fancy clothing. That's not what we do. They're buried in burial shrouds. This is already a takana of Hillel HaZaken, mentioned already in the Meseches Gittin. However, there are a group of people, lo aleinu, that are buried in their clothing. People that are murdered, al kiddush Hashem, are buried in the clothing in which they were killed in. The Shach explains, why is this so? So halach l'mais, this is how it's passed. Kedei lahalo schema v'linkom nakam. In order to arouse anger from the people, that we should avenge this person's death. That doesn't mean you take the law into your own hands, but that means that we don't forget about this person that was murdered. We don't forget that somebody was murdered because of being a Jew. And Rav Soloveitchik applied this idea, it's in Parsha Shlach, to the Israeli flag. And he said, he quoted a story, towards the end of the War of Independence, the UN set a specific date by which the Israeli state and the Arab states could seize territories. By what that means is there was no clear border. It was not clear what the border was going to be. They worked out a lot, but there, this is a very obvious detail, was just left out. Where's the border between the Arab areas and the Israeli areas? It was unclear. So what they said was, this is what they declared, wherever there was an Israeli flag, as far as it can go, that is considered part of the border of Eretz Israel. Obviously, parts that were obviously, belonging to the partitioned state of the Arab, that was theirs. But there's a middle area where it's very unclear. So what would happen? They sent out young, I think men and women, with Israeli flags, running as far as they could, to whatever extent they could, to make the border on the furthest spot possible. And many Israeli soldiers lost their lives attempting to raise the Israeli flag over all of these hilltops and placed in the desert. They were killed blood was spilled with the flag in their hands. And Rav Soloveitchik felt that the Israeli flag has the sanctity and status of a murdered Jew's clothing. He felt he equated this this halacha because it symbolized spilled Jewish blood. Thus, when the Israeli flag flies, it should arise and arouse God's divine compassion for the Jewish people anywhere that it's seen. And that's what the Rav felt the Israeli flag represents. Does it have Kedusha? Halachically, can't tell you that. But that's what it symbolizes, that the Jewish blood is not for free. And as Parsha Shlach ends, we learn about the mitzvah of tzitzis. And tzitzis has in it two colors. What does it have in it? Blue and white. I gave a shiur, I think on Shavuos a bunch of years ago, about the Israeli flag. And the Israeli flag came into being as a result of the Zionist Conference, World Zionist Conference in Switzerland, I think in Basel, Switzerland, in the late 1800s. They made up some prototypes of what the flag would look like. And they decided on the colors based on the Pesukim in our Parsha. That's what they based it on. And so the Rav wanted to know, why is it white and blue and tchelas? Why are those the two colors that it represents? So he says that white represents clarity. Rationality, anything that is obvious and self-evident, that's white. What do we say in Hebrew, modern Hebrew, if you want to say speak clearly, or that person spoke very clearly, you say hadvarim hayu melubanim, right? These words were very white. They were very, very clear.
Crystal
clear, right? Crystal clear. However, when it comes to blue, why is it blue? Rashi quotes Chazal, Gemara in Sota, name or mayor, ma nishtana tchelas mikol minit tzivonim. Why blue? Because it's not as obvious. If they should tchelas dom el yam. You see the blue, it should remind you of the sea. And when you see the sea, the sea should remind you of the firmament, the rakia. And when you see when you remind you of the firmament, dom el kisei kavod. So the Rav says, what is this whole game over here? Just get a color that reminds you of the kisei kavod. I don't know what color that is, but why this whole game? Go from one thing to the next, to the next, to the next. So he says that if white represents the elements of life that we can clearly understand and we can comprehend, Chelas represents the times in our human experience where there are mysteries beyond what we can understand. It's like it connects to this, to this, to this, to this, to this. And ultimately, we don't really know. And the Rav says that's the difference between white and blue. That's why our tzitzis has those two, ideally, has those two colors, white and blue, that there are two parts to our human experience. There are things that we go through in life and we know, we understand, we get it, we cop it. And there are things, just like the past few weeks, tragedy after tragedy, we don't know. We don't know. And that represents the tcheles that is on our tzitzis, and that is on our flag. There are parts and process of this very difficult process that we call Reishis Michas Gulasenu. We call it the process of the beginning of Geula, however you want to say it, Chevlei Mashiach, in which things are so obvious and overt why this needs to happen, and then other things, and you ask yourself and you challenge, why? Why is this the way it is? And that is the two things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks us, 1 second, Harvey, asks us to hold on to as we look at the flag and as we wear our tzitzis every single day. Yeah. Yeah, probably is. Yeah. I don't think it has Kedusha on that level. What it has is it's supposed to arouse a certain thought and feeling and emotion to us. And the Rav connected it to and related it to this notion. You know, halachically, does it have this shamos? Should we? Probably not. Are we going to treat it with respect? 100%. The string should be put away, should be discarded respectfully. That should be put in shamos. People reuse them for different things, but the baget could be discarded respectfully in the trash. Yeah. Oh, I don't know. That's a good point. I don't know. That's great. Okay, thank you. Yeah.
The question.
Idea by the Rav is a sermon on the American flag too. I mean, it's the sanctity of the flag on people who gave their lives for it. So that's the same. Same idea.
If you go to the library, there's like a mailbox
for flags.
Hello, Jay.
Really? It's a law. You can't just move.
You can't dispose.
Yes.
And eyeglasses, right. Eyeglasses, guns, and flags. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Great. Okay. Good to know. I got to learn a lot today. Okay. So today we got to learn. And Yasher Koach, welcome to all our virtual guests as well. So we got to learn a few different questions that we addressed in Parsha Shlach. Why was Yehoshua blessed? Why was he given the bracha, not Kalei? We discussed different approaches to that. What was the intention that they went in with? We quoted the Zohar, we quoted Lefrakim, the Sri De'esh. How did they intend to market this and convince the Jewish people explicitly and implicitly about Eretz Yisrael? That was a great Maharsha with the interpretation of Rabbi Zev Leff. And then we saw at the end the notion of the Israeli flag and the role of these two colors on the Israeli flag, which are also rooted in our tzitzis and a beautiful drasha from Urshechter, quoting the Rav. Wish everybody a great day. Thank you so much for coming. It is still Wednesday, for those that need a reminder.
Good.